We love equation.
You want me to erase it?
Wait a minute. How many guys are there? In fact, the more guys are
there.
It varies. Smaller group. Okay. Okay, so we're going to be in a very major topic in halacha, the sugyas of Hilchos Geiros. You know, as Rabbanim, we take all areas of halacha very seriously. A person asks you a shal and yalav yavel, so you got to take it seriously. A person asks you what bracha to make on a potato chip, you got to take it seriously. But there are dargas, there are, of course, degrees even within the halachic system, which shal is, you know, need a little bit more covered rosh, a little bit more yishvah das, a little bit more expertise in. So, of course, you have Shaz Nuch Shabbos and Shaz Nuch Tas Mishpacha. So serious, potentially serious skilis or chorus. Those are very, very heavy duty as Shailas. But with all said and done, not that we're advocating anybody messing up a Shaz Nuch Shabbos, but at the end of the day, you make a mistake on Nuch Shabbos, okay, you know, we move on. Chav skila, whatever, move on. You know, the world continues. You know, a mistake in Nuch Geiros, a misunderstanding of Allah Nuch Geiros has such serious ramifications. Of course, not just for the person who's asking the Shaila, but potentially for Deri Deris of Klal Yisrael. So the Shaz Vichas Geiros really rank up there as the Shaz HaChamuras B'Yaiser, and therefore the Behuvah as Rabbanim, to really try to get as much understanding, either we're going to be literally Mamish Pasti in Shaz Vichas Geiros, or we're going to be involved in any shape or form in the Geiros process, so with different people over the course of our Rabbanas, so then we really have to be fully aware of what the sugyas are all about. So we're going to try to get a little bit of a background to Hilchos Geiros, both in terms of focusing a little bit on the lumdus. Obviously, it's impossible to talk about pure halacha l'maaseh without getting an appreciation of the background lumdus as well, and try to see how what we can do with this. So all sugyas in Hilchos Geiros really begin with the Gemara in Maseches Krisos, when the Gemara in Daf Tes raises the question, how do we know anything about Hilchos Geiros? How in the world do we know how a person converts? So the fact that there's a concept of Geiros in halacha, I don't need a Gemara Krisos for that. Sukkim talk about it all the time. Clearly there's an institution for somebody not Jewish becoming part of Klal Yisrael. The question is, what vehicle, what mechanism is used to become part of Klal Yisrael? So it doesn't say that explicitly in Tarshish B'Chsav. So the Gemara Maseches Krisos tells us that we have a Mesaira that's based on the Pesukim Kachem, Chiyagur Yichem Ger, L'Beraseichem, Kachem, Kager, Yalif Ne'ashem. I just butchered up the passage. But basically what it means is that the same way that Klal Yisrael became Jewish, that's the model of Deri Deris. That's how a prospective Goy or prospective Goya becomes Jewish. That the same way that the Jewish people entered into becoming the Jewish people, so too, you want to become part of the Jewish people, you have to mimic exactly what happened back in the old days. What were the old days? What was the process that was used? So you have to look in the Pesukim in Sefer Shmos, which describe the transformation of Klal Yisrael from basically being B'nai Noach. There is a machlokes of Rishonim, just exactly what the status of Klal Yisrael was pre-Matan Torah, but it wasn't the full-fledged condition of Yisrael, because clearly something happened in Matan Torah. So that process of Matan Torah has to be mimicked each and every time a prospective Ger Gioris wants to become Jewish. So what exactly did Klal Yisrael undergo to become Jewish? So the Gemara highlights three different processes. So one of them was Milah. How do you know that there was Milah that was done to enable Klal Yisrael to become part of Klal Yisrael? The Gemara has a big chiddush. I wouldn't have said this on my own, but Chazal said it. Chazal say that, well, we know that they had to do a bris milah at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, because the Torah says, Kol Orla Yerchobai, they had to become Nimolim. So comes the Gemara and says, that milah that was done at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim was not just to enable them to become Pesach. It wasn't just because there was a mitzvah of Avinu to have a milah. That was viewed in the halacha as a milah's geirus. And as such, we derive a din l'deiros, that original milah that was done in Mitzrayim, that is part of the vehicles that are necessary to become Jewish. And therefore, for all generations, if a male wants to become Jewish, he has to have a milah. Not just because there's a mitzvah of milah, not just because it's one of the 613 mitzvahs, but that is part of the very etzem chalois of geirus, undergoing a milah l'shem geirus. That's the first of the process derived from Pesukim and Parshas Bo. Then the Gemara raises the question, what's the next process? The Gemara says, tevilah, going to the mikvah, is the second part of the geirus process. Vishtei, how do you know that they underwent the tevilah? So the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos has an attempted pshat, which the Gemara eventually aborts, and then the Rambam brought back to life. So the Gemara says, well, based on Pesukim say, the Chibsu Simon Seichem, right before Matan Torah, they had to be tovel all the clothing. So the Gemara says, they had to tovel their clothing. So Kavachem, they had to tovel themselves. So since clearly the Torah made a point of saying that they had to undergo a tvila pre-Matan Torah, Matan Torah was the vehicle of transformation to conditions of Israel. You see from here within the Dairus that any perspective, Gerek Yairus has to go to the mikveh as well. So the Gemara says, no, not so poshut. Maybe that's what the pasuk means. Maybe the chibsu simoy seichem just means to send the suits to the dry cleaner. It just means clean up. Means if you have a dirty clothing, don't come out and look like a schlep. So clean up your clothing. Then you have to tovel your clothing. And where does it say you have to tovel your body? So the Gemara says, taka right, that the mokra for tevila was not based on that. It's based on the fact that we have a tradition that ein hazo b'li tevila. Whenever there's a hazo's domim on somebody, so automatically that has to be accompanied by a tevila. Where is the hazo's domim? What exactly was the hazo's domim? So the Gemara seems to be interpreting the Pesukim of Parshas Mishpatim, but the Pesukim say, Yisroel, Moshe takes the dam, certain karbonos are brought by Yisroel Kala'am, so he sprinkles the blood on the people. So the Gemara seems to be interpreting Ala'am to mean physically mamish on the people. So whenever you have a hazo'ah, the halacha, let's say, Tayefa Paraduma, so you maz on the person, so hazo'ah is always accompanied by tevila. So too, this hazo'ah of Zriga Sadam, hazo'ah Sadam, Gufa Adam has to be accompanied by a tevila. So that's already a startling pshat, because already some of the Rishonim points out that there's another pshat in that pasuk. We're not even sure that's what the pasuk means, because Rashi and Chumash quotes from the Targum, so the Vayizrak Al-Am doesn't mean on the people, it means Vayizrak Al-Am is Bech, Vachapar Al-Am, a whole different pshat. That wasn't Hazaz, Dalam B'chlal. There is no din that Zrikas Dam Al-Gavim is Bech requires Tevil of a person. There is no such din. So that's a very, very shaky mocker. That's perhaps part of the reason why the Rambam almost falls back on the Havamir of the Gemara. The Rambam says, Rabbi writes, what's the mocha for tevila? So the Rambam writes, v'chipsusim loisam. So again, how the Rambam read that into the Gemara is a different story, but there's some kind of a mocha. So there's no question that this is the din deraisa. The Gemara is learning it out from Sukkim, learning it out from drushes, but even the exact mechanics of where this drush is, it's very, very unclear even within the sugya itself. So far we have two for two, but each one we're not quite sure what we understand. They built him, it says in the pasuk that they built him in Baharsina. They built him in Zbech. Then the Gemara goes for the third one. What's the third vehicle that's necessary? The Gemara says the third vehicle is the offering of a carbon itself. And out of all the three, this is the most explicit on the Chumash, because the Torah says they tapa brought karbanos. So the bringing of the karbanos in Pasha and Mishpat wasn't just nice, the celebration of Shavuos. It was done as part of the Gevurah process. So you have to have karbanos at carbon as well. So the Gemara says, finally, if all the dust settles, Mila is derived from Mitzrayim. Tevila is derived from Matan Torah in one shape or another, and Korban is derived from Parshas Mishpatim. These are clearly all three dinim in Daraisa. No question about it. These are the three parts that go into the Gevurah process. The Gemara qualifies the third of the processes, the process of Hakorbas HaKorban. The Gemara raises the question, Imkein b'zman hazeh lo nekabel Gevurah. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so we should do away with all of Gevurahs. So no, so that's what the Gemara says. No, we don't do away with all of Gevurahs b'zman hazeh. Because we have a special pasuk called the Deir Seichem. The Deir says you can be Makabel Gerim for all generations, but the Deir Deiris. So even Bizman Shem Bish Mikdash Kayim, maybe the Abdi can still have Gerim. So that's why we still have Gerim Bizman Azeh, even though we don't have that third requirement. Meheri Yavon HaMikdash, so we're going to tell all the Gerim for the last 2,000 years, first thing they have to go do is go run to bring their carbon. But Bizman Azeh, they're still considered to be fully fledged Jewish, even without the offering of the carbon. The Gemara tells a story that in the right after the carbon, so the people who wanted to convert, so they felt very bad. They wanted to bring a korban. On the other hand, they couldn't bring a korban, so they used to set aside money. They would be makdish money, put in the drawer, put in a little bag, and maybe one of mikdash will bring this, use this money to buy a korban. And Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai, right after the korban, he saw this practice, and he thought it was a bad idea. Because what it meant was, people are going to be makdish money. The money has kedusha to it. There's nisim eel on the money. It's going to sit in your drawer for the next 2,000 years. Someone's going to end up using it to buy a cup of korban with. Because it's going to violate the Yisrael Me'ilah, so therefore he abolished this practice. So, again, the fact that the Gerim will have to bring Kabbalahs that he didn't abolish, that's going to happen. But to set aside money for Bizman Hazeh, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai thought it was a poor practice. So, Lamais, that's what Bizman Hazeh, we just suffice ourselves with Milam Tefillah, we just leave the carbon part to Meheri Ban HaMikdash. Fine. So, that's the starting point of the Sugya. Again, these are all Dinim Deraisa derived from Sukkim, from Svaris, from Kabbalahs, whatever the Makaris are. That's the Din Deraisa, that the person becomes Jewish with Milam Tefillah and carbon. There is a question that the Machlekes of Tanaim that appears in the fourth paragraph of Masechet Yevamos, how much of this whole picture is Ma'achi B'di'evit? Just because you have to do something min HaTorah doesn't mean that it's necessarily Ma'achi B'chalais. Let's say Moshe L'mod HaBedoimim. when a husband dies without children, so the wife has to undergo chalitza. So in order for him to become muteret, she has to undergo the mitzvah chalitza, but there are multiple parts to chalitza. There's the taking off of the shoe, there's the spitting on the floor, there's the reading of the psukim. So you have to do all three. There's no question in the Torah you have to do all three, but it's not clear how much of the above is ma'akev. So the Gemara tells us, the Mishnah tells us to Maseches Yevamos, that the kriyas ha'psukim is not ma'akev. The Gemara after a pasuk, that's not ma'akev b'di'evit. What about the rekikas? That's a machlekes ha'tanaim. We pass in halacha that the only part that's ma'akev is the chalitza. What doesn't mean that you don't have to do the rekika. It doesn't mean you don't have to do the psukim. The Torah says you have to do it. It's just that to fulfill the mitzvah b'shlemusa, you have to do all three. But to accomplish the desired result, to affect the chalois, so maybe one of them is ma'akev. So the same issue that Gemara raises when it comes to geiros, avad you have to do all of the above. Avad in a Torah, you have to milo, tefillin, korban. That's the drushas, that's the whole sugya. But how much of this is really truly ma'akev in the geiros? So the Gemara quotes three possible opinions in the Tanoim, similar to what we have in Maseches Yevamos. Three different possibilities. So one possibility in Tanoim is that only the milo is ma'akev. And the other day in Tanoim is only the tefillin is ma'akev. And the third opinion is the way we pass. They're both ma'akev. So we pass in Rabbi Yechidam, Hadocha, Eino Gera, Chimo, Vigitlo. So this is Nimru Vigomru, Chachme Gemara already came to the conclusion. So this is not negotiable anymore. That's the Pesach Hadocha of Zman Hazeh, that you have to have Milo Tefillah, not just the Hetchila, you have to have Milo Tefillah, even with the Evan. In the absence of either Milo Tefillah, if either one of them is not done properly, then the person is considered to be a Goy Gomru. That's how we pass in Hadocha. The question is, what exactly do those words mean? I just said a very harsh statement. The person said, Goy Gomer, he's nothing, he's zero. So one could raise the following shayla, say a regular protocol of Mila, regular normal scenario of Mila, of Gera, so you'd have a Mila, and then you'd do a Tefillah. We'll talk about later on why the order was adopted that way, not the reverse way. Maybe that's the quickest way, but it isn't that. We'll get to that down the line. So let's say a normal standard protocol of Gera is you have a Bris Mila and you have a Tefillah. And in the days of the Gemara, there was very often a little bit of a break between the Mila and the Tefillah. The person had a heal. Today also, heal a little bit. So you don't want to take a person with an open wound and throw them into the mikvah. So you let them heal for a couple of days. So in that interim period, after they already underwent the Mila and they haven't yet done the Tefillah, what are they? So the Pashas HaDvarim is, they're a great gomer. The Oilam Eino Gera Chimo V'Yitvol. The Halach L'Mais is like Rabbi Yaisi, like Rabbi Yechon says, Halach Rabbi Yaisi. The Eino Gera Chimo V'Yitvol. So Kozman, they haven't completed the Mila Tefillah. They're considered to be mamish goyim gemurim, l'chol dini ha-Torah. That's the Pashas HaDvarim. So some acharonim write, no, some acharonim write, it's not true. Now, the olam geir ha-chiyim of yitvah means that the Kedushas Yisrael is not complete until they undergo tefillah b'mikvah. So we need a tefillah b'mikvah, no question about that. But to say that nothing happened to Mila, something did happen in Mila, there was something, they accomplished something, there's some kind of a quasi, a kinesis for something or other, something was accomplished, even on level of their eyes, so they are considered to be different. They're not quite a full-fledged goy. On the other hand, they're not quite a full-fledged Jew either. If you want to, you know, use some kind of a halacha / drush kind of a category, it's almost like a little bit like a summa rava say tov, not yet. It means they already left being a goy. Once you have an orla, you remove the orla, so you're out of the goyish world, but you haven't quite entered into the world of Christ, so you're almost a little bit of limbo. Is that true? Does that concept even exist? That's not clear in the Gemara, not clear in the Rishonim exactly. Does that concept even make any sense? But there are Acharonim who have that idea. It's very enough Kabina Ladina. At the end of the day, so he can't, doesn't count for minyan. At the end of the day, he's not really obligated to mitzvahs. He's still a guy. He can't even catch Anisha yet. So at the end of the day, does it really matter at all that he's in limbo? Is there anything really to the Mila B'li Tefillah? So this touches on a very famous Shaila, well, hopefully we'll talk about a little bit later on. When we talk about one of the unique challenges in the process of Geirus is the halach of Goy Sheshavas, Acham Sheshavas. The Gemara says in Maseches Sanhedrin that a non-Jew is not permitted to keep Shabbos. The Gemara derives this from the Pasuk, Lo Yishvosu, and Kachinem Halacha, that's the tradition that we have, that a Goy is not allowed to keep Shabbos. It's a Gomer for Goy to keep Shabbos. So this, of course, creates a whole bunch of technical issues. One of the issues we're going to talk about towards the end of the series of Shirim is just the training process of Geirus. So we like to train the Geirim to try to have them mimic being Jewish. So obviously we would love to have them mimic keeping Shabbos. The only problem is that we can't have them practice keeping Shabbos because there will be maksha them in this avei of Lodish Mosul. So you have to walk a tightrope in this. So we try to keep, we try to train them to keep Shabbos, but then at one point we make them be Mechal Shabbos. So we have to, we'll talk about later on, how do we do that practically speaking? What do we make the goy do? You know, we don't want to make him do too much because then it detracts from the whole Shabbos. On the other hand, we have to make him do something to make sure that he doesn't violate the avera, so to speak, of keeping Shabbos. That was the background for the famous joke about the Eruv, when somebody was this guy was carrying or something. So they said to him, you're not going to keep Shabbos. So he said, don't worry, I'm carrying. So he said, but there's an Eruv. So he said, I don't rely on the Eruv. So, okay, so... But on a more serious note, so there was a Ma'aseh Shehaya, a very famous shahar that came up in Yerushalayim in the mid-1800s, about there was a person who was converting, and they had a bris milah, and they hadn't yet done a tvila. So apparently this wasn't like the most common thing. People weren't mimagayr. The numbers of gayrus usually depends on just how good the Jewish community is and how bad the goyim wanted the Jews. So throughout the Middle Ages, you didn't have people on mass running to become Jewish. Unfortunately, you have people running the other direction. But when things come better, when you know after Napoleon, after the emancipation, after the Jews got a lot of freedom, so then the numbers of gayrus started skyrocketing higher. So in America, we have a lot of gayrus, but we're doing okay. I mean, relatively speaking. So in the 1800s in Eretz Yisrael, so Lav Dafka, first of all, there weren't too many people in Eretz Yisrael. So you had a bunch of Rishalmis, some of the Prussian who had started to come, and then you had a bunch of Arabs who were living there. So Lav Dafka, the Arabs were running to become Jewish. The Turks weren't necessarily becoming to be Jewish. They didn't have that many Gayim Shalos. But there was there was a fellow who was a Mazel, whatever it was. He was converting to become Jewish. I think maybe it wasn't a Mazel because he had a Mila, so I think it was different. But it was someone who was converting to become Jewish, and he had a meal already, and he hadn't yet had a tefillah, and Pog Shabbos came. And the shahar that was the Sarah was, is he allowed to keep Shabbos or not allowed to keep Shabbos? Is he supposed to keep Shabbos? Not what's his status exactly? So if you would have asked me, I would have said, he's a goy gomer, we're finished, he's still goy. So he's still bound by the Yisrael rights. Well, he's both, so he has to violate Shabbos. So that's what the Rabbanim and Yerushalayim at the time, Paskin, the Ma'aseh Shehaya, that the way the story is told is that right before Mincha, so he came to Shul, Mincha, and they told him just before you'd have Mincha, he's a goy. Before you'd have Mincha, they said to him, we're not going to give you an aliyah, but before you'd have Mincha, write your name, sign your name. So they told him, go take a pen and a paper, and write your name, make sure you mechal Shabbos kol hadayis. I don't know whether they made him write in Lashon HaKodesh or not, maybe they suffice. It's a shock stuff from the hell he goes, who wrote that about the story? I'm not sure. But anyway, but the mice, they made him be, the mechal Shabbos. Good. So when that story was told over to Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger in Europe, in the museum, so he was very upset about that story. So he said that he thought the Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger made a mistake. Actually, the way the story was told was that Shmuel Salant, I think it was the Rabbi Yerushalayim at the time, I think he was out of town. He was on vacation that week or something, so he wasn't there. So whoever was subbing for Shmuel Salant was saying the shiurim that week. So he was the summer rabbi, so he gave this pesach. So when Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger found out about this pesach, he thought it was a big mistake. He thought that when you have a person who is a mal v'lo tovo, he's mechuyif to keep Shabbos already. He thinks that he's not really an akam anymore. Akam sheshavos means that his mamash a goy gomer is not allowed to keep Shabbos. But someone who's already mal l'shem geirus, so he's not an akam anymore. He's not quite a Yisrael, but he's not yet an akam, and he's allowed to keep Shabbos. Not only is he allowed to keep Shabbos, but he thinks that he's mechuyif to keep Shabbos. Says the Dirachim there, he's mamash mechuyif in the bris of Shabbos, even though he's not technically Jewish. Mahecha teisa that mechuyif in Shabbos without being Jewish. So he brings a historical proof. He says that when did Klal Yisrael get the mitzvah of Shabbos? They got a midbara. So Klal Yisrael, those 7 weeks in the midbar, before Matan Torah, were Gayim Shemolah Lo Tavlu. Because we said that the Mila was done in Mitzrayim, at the time of the Tzitz Mitzrayim. The Mila was done 7 weeks later by Shemolah Matan Torah. So for those 7 weeks, they were in this limbo. And the Rabbanim Shalom Kapaskin against the Rabbanim and Rishalayim. The Rabbanim Shalom Kapaskin that they are allowed to get Shabbos. And the Mechuk of Shabbos. So the Vinitzim got the Deir Deiris. Anytime you have a guy who's in between Milah and Tefillah, is Mechuyim in a Torah to keep Shabbos. It's a very Mechudishtik Shita. But whatever it is, it's based on this understanding. So the bottom line is that whatever the Lumbus is, Lamaisa, until the Milah is done properly, until the Tefillah is done properly, the person is not really considered to be Jewish. So we want to make sure that the Milah and the Tefillah are done properly. So the Gemara raises the question, which becomes the background of a very, very common scenario for Zman Hazeh, about the mitzvah mila. It's wonderful to talk about doing mila on a guy, assuming that he's an orach, assuming that he still has a foreskin to be mom. What if this guy was coming at the age of 25 to convert, had his orla removed 25 years ago as a baby in the hospital, not and of any connection to becoming Jewish? There was no gayrus, there was no mile, there was no bagels, there was nothing. It was just a medical circumcision. So now what do you do with such a fellow? Because he wants to convert. So what are we going to tell him? So the Gemara raises a question in Maseches Yevamos and in Maseches Shabbos. What do you do about such a person? So the Gemara quotes a machlokes atanoim. So one possibility the Gemara says is that you do nothing. So he can't have a meal. So the show must go on. So you do a tefillah on him and finish. So what's the big deal? He can't do a meal. So you don't do a meal. But what are you going to do? Mal. There's nothing to be mal. And the other Tana says, no, that we have to do a meal on him. I can't do a meal. There's nothing to do. So the other Tanaim say, no, you have to do what's called a tokas tambris. You have to do a substitute meal. You have to draw a little bit of blood. We'll talk about a little bit later on what that means practically. You have to draw a little bit of blood from that area where the orla would have normally been, And that's somehow hope spoke, that suffices as a milah, and then you continue with the gerus, tefillah, etc., carbon, whatever the methods are, other methods that are necessary. So machlekes hatanoim, what do you do with this fellow? Do you say that, don't do anything, just proceed with tefillah? Or do I say, no, not so fast, I can't just proceed without a milah. If in the absence of the ability to do a real milah, I have to do a toughest on persons. So the Gemara has a similar sugya about an individual who can't have a milah, but not in the context of gerus. The Gemara has the same shaila about what's called nolad mohel. If a baby is born, a Jewish baby, you're going to do it with gerus. If a Jewish baby is born, and he happens to not have an ora orla, whatever, didn't form properly, there really is no ora orla there. So what do? So once again, you find the machlekes hatanoim. So half the tanoim say, don't do anything. So just finish. Make a shalom zochem, and sure, that's what we do. There's no bris. And the other tanoim say, no, you can't do that. You have to do something. You have to do a tafas tam bris. You have to do something in place of an actual milah. So you have the same machlekes, almost the same machlekes, about the non-Jew who's trying to convert without a possibility of doing a real halachic milah, and the nolad mohel, the Jewish kid, who also can't do a real milah, and the Gemara has the same achlokes. Half the Torah say do nothing, just move on, and the other half the Torah say no, you have to do a toughest tambris. So are these sugyas identical to one another? So it seems pretty clear from the Gemara, for sure from the Rishonim, that these sugyas are not necessarily identical at all. They're really two very, very different issues. It happens to result in almost the same process called a tavas tabris, but how we got there is very, very different. In the case of the baby, so the Gemara has a whole sugya Masechta Shabbos, that maybe there's a whole other concern going on. The other concern is, maybe there's what we call an orla kavusha. Maybe there really is an orla there. Baby's born, but the mother, the pediatricians, everyone's examined the baby, nobody sees anything. On the other hand, maybe we don't know how to look so well. Maybe there is something going on there. Maybe there is something deeper going on there. Maybe there is almost a hidden orla, and that hidden orla has to be addressed by a tavas tabris. Which is the big question in the Rishon, how does that do that exactly? How, in Tum Tulam, there's a hidden orla, so what? How does the Tavas Tambris rectify the hidden orla? That's more of a Mula Shaila than a Gera Shaila, another topic. But some, at least at one stage of the Gemara, Masechta Shabbos, the Gemara talks about that being the issue in concerning a baby. When it comes to the Gersh of this guy here, it's not an issue of an orla kavusha. This 25-year-old, when he was 3 days old, he had a regular orla. And we know the doctor removed it, and it's gone. There's no oral kibush here. So the requirement of a hatavas tabris for that fellow has nothing to do with a physical hatavas tabris. We're not trying to accomplish anything by removing. What we're trying to do is some kind of a halachic gesture, some halachic symbolic act of almost a substitute for bris milah. So the hatavas tabris of the baby seems to be a little bit of a different twist than the hatavas tabris for the gersh and his gaya. But what is the din? Lamais, it's machlekes hatanoim. What is the din? Do we paskin that both of them need a tavas tambris? Do we paskin neither of them need? Do we paskin that one needs the other? What's the din? So there are three different opinions in the Rishonim what the halach is about all these tavas tambris shailas for both for babies as well as for prospective gerim. So some of the Rishonim say that when it comes to a ger, forget about it. You don't really need a tavas tambris. We can be make them. There's no real need. We pass like the other tanoim. You don't really need that tavas tambris. Just go on business as usual. Go do the tefillah and finish. When it comes to a baby, we're much, much more nervous. When it comes to a baby, oh, yeah, yeah, that's a suffix or a kavusha, suffix kare. So then we're going to insist on a tavas tambris. That's one group of rishonim. The other group of rishonim say the exact opposite. That no. When it comes to the baby, come on. What kind of suffix or a kavusha? Or a kavusha? Are you kidding? The pediatrician, the urologist said there's no a kavusha. There's no a kavusha. Finish. Why would you want to do a tavas tambris? For what purpose? The person is Jewish. Kid Jewish is born from a Jewish mother. So what are you playing games? You're a tavas tambris for? What are you accomplishing? But when it comes to the ger, the other half of the Rishonim say, we have to do something because you have to do some kind of a nice of a mila. That's an integral part of the gerus process. If you can't do a mila, so then the Torah says, a tavas tambris satisfies as a substitute of mila. So you have machlekes in the Rishonim and a kotze la kotze. Half the Rishonim is saying that Hatavas Tambris is absolutely critical for the baby, but not so important for the ger. And the other half of the Rishonim say, no, the ger is much more important, the baby we could forego. How do we paskin halacha? So we paskin Shulchan Aruch, that we're not sure what the answer is. And therefore, we treat it all as one big suffix. And therefore, both the case of the baby and the case of the ger, we are going to insist on Hatavas Tambris, albeit without a bracha. We're not going to run to make the bracha, because we're not convinced that either one would actually use it. On the other hand, we're not going to let the baby go without something, and we're not going to let the ger go without something either. So how does that spell out lemaisa for us? So in Shulchan Aruch, here then, with Gerus, we pass in halacha a very common shaila. There's a lot of people, especially in a place like America, a lot of the goyim were circumcised. So a person comes at the age of 25, wants to become Jewish. So we say, great, wonderful. So So let's take a look and make sure that you're really circumcised. Sometimes it's not necessarily circumcised properly. Sometimes we have to actually remove a little bit more of the oil. But assuming that he's circumcised properly, there's no oil over there. So it's like, great, wonderful. Well, you don't have to do any more milah, but you still have to do a tavas tabris, vitar sofek, and we're not going to make a bracha on it. Normally we do make a bracha on milah sager. So we're not going to make a bracha on milah sager because according to Hefter Rishayim, it's not necessary. But misafek, a sofek deraisa, we're going to do it. Is this really a sofek deraisa? Even assuming that there is a principle called a tavas tabris, which again, half the Tanaim, half the Rishonim deny in each scenario. Al atzad that you need it, al atzad that we pass in the Enidim Misafik, is it a real din deraisa, or is it only a din midirabonim? So maybe one can argue that minat Torah, none of this exists. Minat Torah, the Torah says do a milas again. He doesn't have an orla, so he doesn't have an orla. Who made up the Tavis Abris? Rabbanim made it up because we need something. It's a little symbolic, a little gesture, a little something on the level of the Rabbanim. Or do we say no? This idea of a Tavis Abris wasn't made up by the Chacham, Chazal didn't make this up. This is part of the Messiah, that this is the substitute for Smilah. This is the official Torah substitute. If and when you can't do a bris, you have to do a Tavis Dan Bris. So it's not clear, even Al Atzad that we require a Tavis Dan Bris for Geirim Bisman Hazeh, is it a real bona fide Suffolk Deraisa? Or is maybe the whole din was only a Chumma Derabon anyway? So Mechaschinich is not true. Mechaschinich in the base throws out the Shadis. It's not true, it doesn't know. From the Gemara, it's hard to tell. Is it a real din Deraisa, only a din Derabon? It's not 100%, not 100% clear. There is a raya from at least some of the Rishonim that a Tavis Dan Bris is mamash a din deraisa. It's a very, very strange raya. There is a sugya in Masechet Bava Kama da Peches where the Gemara is discussing about those with Moshe in heaven last year. You may remember we spoke about this. The Gemara is discussing about how do you know that an Eved Kenani is possible to be an aid. We state in the Torah that an Eved Kenani can't be an aid. So the Gemara is drushes and backwards and mice left and dry. The Matinos and Ben-Yin-Tzah, I'll try to figure out how do you know that an Eved Kenani can't be an aid. So in the middle of the discussion, the Gemara says, well, if a woman can't be an aid, so maybe Kal v'Chomer, an Eved Kenani can't be an aid. The Gemara pilples back and forth and back and forth between the comparison between women and Eved Kenani. In place this famous guy, Rav the Lola Me'isha, Zer Shoghe. Not for now, I'm not learning how to go to Kenani today. Maybe that's next, maybe next semester. But in terms of the Psul Eved Kenani Le'edus, the Gemara tilts back and forth between Isha and Eved. In the middle of that Shach Matai, the Gemara says, no, that there's a difference between an Eved and an Isha, because Mala Isha, she can eat a B'mila. Hashem ain't getting a Kenani, is Yeshua B'mila. So since an Isha doesn't have Mila, so she's lacking in things. She doesn't have certain qualities that an Eved Kenani has. Eved Kenani is better. Eved Kenani is more Jewish, so to speak, than an Isha, because the Eved Kenani has Mila, and the woman doesn't have Mila. So the Rishonim of the Spadi has a Kasha, the woman doesn't have Mila, because she doesn't have an Orla. What kind of Kasha is that? How does that prove anything? That's just a mitzias. So the Shit Mekubetzes on the spot quotes from, I'm not mistaken, from Rabbeinu Yeshaya, who says that, no, that with the Gemara's kasha was like this, that a woman doesn't have mila, not just because she doesn't have an orla. The Torah could have given her a mitzvah of mila to do what? To do what? Topas dam bris, be'echad mishari v'areha. Means that the Torah really, really wanted to give a woman the mitzvah of mila, could have given her a token, make-believe substitute mila, by telling her she's got to prick her finger, she's got to take out blood to do a tapas, hidei dam abris, ben yibin eichem. So the Torah could have given it to her, and the Torah didn't give it to her. You see from here that a woman is ain't of a Torah's mila klal. So that's a startling statement. It means this is a din deraisa. But the Shit Mekubetzes is trying to say a pshat in a drasha of deraisa. We're pulling about the status of an Eved Kenani vis-a-vis an Isha, vis-a-vis Aegis, which they all did in deraisa. And the Gemara had said with a straight face, Mala Isha She'ena B'mila, which according to the Shit Mekubetzes translates to mean, Mala Isha She'kein Ena Chayevas Ha'atik Tam Bris. That means that Atavas Tam Bris is a deraisa in a concept, because it's something that the Torah believes in. If it's something that the Rabbana made up 1,000 years later, so how is that going to affect the existence within deraisa? So again, it's a collector's item that Shit Mekubetzes, but in case you want to raya whether Atavas Tam Bris is deraisa or not, if you have it in Bavakam, the Pechez, or Shit Mekubetzes. Back to that story. Lemaisa, when the deraisa did Rabban, at the end of the day, in Shulchan Aruch it says in the Chizkeiros that any time you have a goy who comes to convert, so we are going to insist on him having a hatofas dambris. Are there any situations that arise where we can almost be mevater on this? Are there any situations where we can ever dream of converting somebody and not do neither a mila mamish? Or not even a tavas dam bris. That make any sense? Are you talking? Is any kimsa that you could end up with doing mamash nothing? So there was a famous shayla that the Haredim discussed. It was about 100 years ago or so. It just became a very, very hot topic. Haredim discussed as follows. What if you have a person who wants to convert. A goy wants to convert. Really, to me, it's a sincere guy wants to convert, but he has a medical condition that he's not allowed to have a bris. He's an oral mamish, but he's not allowed to have a bris. He's a hemophiliac, he's going to die, because Kashashi may die if he has a bris. So what do you do about such a person? So there was one opinion that was suggested that, well, maybe we can convert him anyway. Why? What was the svar to convert him anyway? Madach, if he would be born as a Jew, and he would have a chashash, a pikuach nefesh, so we would say, meisu echa machos mila. So you're not allowed to forget, you're not allowed to do a bris on a meisu echa machos mila. So this guy is like a meisu echa machos mila. He's a mesukin, he's a chere mesukin, a pikuach nefesh. So what do you want from him? So we'll convert him, and then he's not going to be mechuyev in the bris anyway, because he's a chere sheyesh bris hakara. He'll be Jewish without a bris. So that idea was floated around in Europe a little bit. So all the poskim thought that suggestion was mamish, absolutely wrong. Mamish, l'hoyot v'amiyot, such a svara. The obvious chiluk is so posh between the two cases that in the case of a baby who's born, a Jewish baby that's born, so he's Jewish. The purpose of the bris is not to make him Jewish. He's full-fledged Jewish, but he has a bris, doesn't have a bris. The bris for Yisrael is a milas Yisrael, the Torah's milas mitzvah. So a Jew is obligated to keep Shabbos, to keep kosher, to not be even Yom Kippur, but who do a lot of mitzvahs? And then we have another mitzvah called the Chai Bam that trumps all of the above. So the Chai Bam trumps the obligation of doing a bris milah. So when the bris milah is a milas mitzvah, so then the Chai Bam applies. And he doesn't do the mitzvah. Finished. But over here, we don't have anything bad against this fellow. We're not upset at this fellow. We say to him, listen, you don't have the mechanics to become Jewish. It's not your fault, but what are we going to do about it? If you don't have the mechanics, let's say, Moshe the Vedemia, a guy wants to convert in the middle of the desert, and there's no mikvah. So we say, we feel bad for you. There's no mikvah. You can't convert. So if you can't do a bris milah, we feel terrible for you, but we can't do it. We can't convert you without having a bris milah. We can't turn around and say, well, you're an honest Chumana Patre. Honest Chumana Patre, a chayvah, and that's a klal of the mitzvahs. This is a klal in the chalois. The chalois of Geirus requires a saras ha'olah. If you don't have a saras ha'olah, it's not your fourth name. Tomorrow you're not going to become Jewish. It's Elohim. So now, let's say the fellow's going to say, okay, good. So I'm willing to risk it. I'm willing to put my life in danger and have the bris milah. What do you do now? So we shouldn't do such a milah. Again, it's a lot of trouble if you do such a milah. So we wouldn't advocate doing such a milah. Does he have a right to say that? Yalpi Aloha, can he put his life at risk to become Jewish? I don't know. It's very long to shout, but we're not going to help him on this one. But there's no way we're going to be able to run such a milah. That's not going to make good press for us if we do bris milah and he dies from the bris milah. So, but in Europe, this was mamash a real shadow. So there was such an idea floating around that maybe we can do without the milah. But mamash, so the place compelled that the whole thing was lahayut barbiyah. Are there any other real cases that come up that we can almost do away with either a bris milah or without a tavas tambris? So the most common shaila that happens with Zman HaZem is as follows. Where the Rishayim, the Gemara and the Rishayim, the Shulchan Aruch were describing a Tavas Tambris, that meant when you had a fellow who was Gersh Nizgai Kishu Moho, that meant that he was medically circumcised or other religions that he subscribed to. As a little boy, he received a circumcision, and now 20 years later, he wants to become Jewish. What if he didn't receive a circumcision at the age of a little boy? He received a Bris Milah as a little boy. One small tactical problem. He wasn't Jewish. They thought he was Jewish. The mother thought he was Jewish. His mother thought he was Jewish. The grandmother, everyone thought he was Jewish, except nobody actually bought it to figure out. Probably did. He wasn't Jewish. Why wasn't he Jewish? Because somebody converted somebody. Shalakidin. Somebody didn't come to the fourth year Lamais Shirim. So somebody converted his mother. Shalakidin. Someone converted the grandmother. Who knows what happened? And now this kid is being raised as a Jew. He received not a medical circumcision in the hospital at the age of 3 days old. He received a bris and shul with brachas, with bagels, with lox, with the works. And he's been going to yeshiva, and he's 25 years old, and all of a sudden, somebody comes to the realization that he was never Jewish all along. So he's asked to meet a guy. No question, he has to meet a guy. If those are the facts, he has to go and have a geirus. So now he comes, and he says, well, I want to be a guy here. So what do we tell him? Do we say to him, okay, first thing you have to do is have a bris? He says, Rabbi, I have a bris already. Well, wait a second. Shetin Shulchan Aruch. That just because you have a bris, you still need a tavas tambris. So does this fellow need a tavas tambris or not? What's the shaila? It's a double portion. I mean, misafik. The same way every other geshes gakshu mohol requires. So one could argue this is a little bit better. One, but medrash mamurim that the halacha requires a tavas tambris. Maybe that's only true when the original milah wasn't done as part of Judaism, but when it was done as a Jewish milah. So maybe we could almost make an equation. If we have any room on the board, we make an equation. The equation would be a milas Yisrael is almost like a milas Geiris. It's all the same things. The same Ribbono Shel Olam, same Torah, same Yerdeh, same Chinuch, same Mile, same Bagel, same Lach. It's all the same thing. So what's the difference between whether it was done, whoopsie, we thought he was Jewish, or it really truly was accomplishing in a sense to be a milas Geiris? So maybe we could say, Gloitos Nama Freya, that he had a Mila L'Shem Yisrael. A Mila L'Shem Yisrael was at 8 days old. He's been a Ger Shemot L'Dol for the last 25 years. I kept Shabbos for 25 years. So for the last, he was like Klai Yisrael and Mar. In the 7 weeks that he had 25 years stay in the entire. So maybe that's how we should view it. We should view the original Mila as a Mila's Gerus. What do I say now? What are you talking about? Mila's Gerus? What is that Mila's Gerus? The Mila's Yisrael. How in the world is Mila's Yisrael hocus pocus substitute for Mila's Gerus? That's a Shad. That's a very, very real Shad. The pose. This is not a theoretical shad. This is a very, very real shad. The person, there was a goof in the Yichus, they misunderstood what happened. And now, 20 years later, the fellow wants to know, does he require a new Atabas or not? So what are the tzadim in the shayla? How could we possibly be pesha in the shayla? So there are those who wanted to suggest that this may depend upon a famous kash that Ramban raises in Masechet Yevamos in the sugya of Atabas Tambris. But the Ramban says, if you look back on the Gemara, so we spend so much time on what the Makairis for the dinim of Mila are. Remember, the Gemara said the Mokar for the Mila's Geiris is the Mila at Yitzias Mitzrayim. So the Ramban poses the question, the Rambam, in Hukkas Yisur Abiyah, but the dinim of Geiris quotes from the Medrash, where Chazal say, and the Pasuk of Rishni in Tzaylu, the Shevet Levi kept up for Smila throughout all the years of Mitzrayim. The rest of Klai Yisrael fell by the wayside. Somehow they didn't keep for Smila. But Shevet Levi, they stuck to Bris Mila all along. So, frankly, Rabban, according to that Medrash, the Rambam quotes, so how did the Levium become Jewish? When it came time to leave Mitzrayim, so this question is about Moshe and Aaron, all the cousins, how did all the Levium become Jewish? Bishlam, the rest of Klai Yisrael, had a Mila, and that was the Mila Shem Geiris. But the Shevet Levium, what was their Mila? How did they participate in the first act of Geiris? So, Rabban, quotes two answers to this question. So one answer the Ramban says is that in the Chinam they had a Tavis Tavris. It's very hard to test this in stock, but we have no idea, because I don't say what they did. So the Ramban suggests maybe they had a Tavis Tavris. The Eidish Shlomo says the Ramban, no, that maybe they didn't require a Tavis Tavris. Aye, but we passed that Tavis Tanoi, but you do need a Tavis Tavris. The Ramban says, no, that's not the same thing. A Tavis Tavris is needed when you have a Goy who converts 20 years later, because his circumcision was not a mitzvah circumcision. But the Mila that the Levim had, when Amram gave a Bris Mila to Aaron in Mitzrayim, so that was done to Tairas by Dab Hashem, but it was B'Tairas Bris of Levim, it was B'Tairas Hatta Bris Yisishmar. So that was a Jewish Mila. So a Jewish Mila suffices as a Mila's Geiris, even though they hadn't even been given the Parish of Geiris yet. They weren't even talking about the Megar yet. It was only done B'Tairas Mila's Yisrael, but a Mila's Yisrael can substitute as a Mila's Geiris. So 2 days in the Ramban. So some Achareim write that if you hold like the first teres in the Ramban, that a Milas Yisrael somehow is not the same as a Milas Geirus, you can't extrapolate one from another. So now we're talking about people, we're talking about a big problem. So how could you, what are you going to do with this fellow, this kid who thought he was born Jewish, he had a Mila 20 years ago, what are you going to do with him? So Nebuch, you have to have a Tavis Tambris, the same way Bashanar needed a Tavis Tambris, so this kid's going to need a Tavis Tambris also. But if you like the second answer in the Ramban, that a Milas Yisrael suffices as a Milas Geiris, so maybe we can justify the original Mila and turn around and call it a Milas Geiris. So others point out that the Dimyon is not correct. The comparison is not right. The second answer in the Ramban may not help here. Why? In the case of the Levium, it wasn't just a theoretical Milas Yisrael. It was right. They were supposed to be doing that. They were doing what the Ratzon Hashem was. But this kid that had a bris mila 20 years ago with his bagels and lox as a little kid, he's a goy, his mother wasn't Jewish, his grandmother wasn't Jewish. So that mila may have been done the shame of the Yisrael, but there was no tokef to it, there was no halachic significance to it. So if you did a circumcision on a goy shenevi, you did it with a bracha and a mayel and shul, but what you did was the circumcision wasn't a bris mila. So this is because Aaron HaKohen's bris as a little baby to suffice as a mila's gerus 100 years later, 83 years later, But that doesn't necessarily translate to mean that a Mila of a Goy, even though it was done with shame, it was Yisrael, erroneously with shame, it was Yisrael, who says that's going to translate to become a Mila's Geiris? So the Raya, the Dimyon from the Ramban, is not for Gucha. Do we have any other Rayas? Any other examples, whether somehow doing things as a Jew, somehow that becomes doing things like a Ger, the two are really almost intertwined. So one of the other raya's is a very, very famous gemara, which hopefully we're going to talk about a lot as the shiurim develop. One of the most pivotal gemaras in Geiris, the gemara in the fourth parak of Yivamis. The gemara tells a story, jumping ahead for a moment to Tevila. The gemara tells a story about how there was a certain woman who had apparently converted, and there was some kind of a pikbuk about Hageirus. It wasn't clear what the pikbuk was even. There was some kind of question about Hageirus. So the Shaila came up to the Amorim. So they said, this woman, she's already been acting Jewish for the last 20 years. She's already married. She's from. She goes to the mikveh every month. Tas mishpacha. The Gemara says four words, Milo Tavolin Nidusa. Isn't she going to the mikveh b'teres tilas nida? So she's going to the mikveh b'teres tilas nida. It's also good. But you have to go b'teres Geirus. So even if the original Geirus was shaky, Milo Tavolin Nidusa. The tefillah l'shem nidus is good enough as well. So it's those four magic words, Milo Tavolin Nidusa. So what do those words mean? So the simple reading of the Gemara is that even though the first tefillah somehow was not done properly, but for the last 20 years, there's been a tefillah nida. And that could somehow double the tefillah's geirus. How could that double the tefillah's geirus? But that's b'teres taras mishpach, that's b'teres geirus. So the chur, you see from the Gemara that when I do something to be a Jewish act, I'm doing a Jewish ritual religious act called tevila, so even though my particular intent was tevila b'toras mitzvah, I wasn't really interested in becoming Jewish, I thought I was Jewish all along, but afal pi chein,
excuse me, I'm supposed to speak Rabbi Shemmel's shiur in 3 minutes. Can I make an announcement? That's all. Go fast enough. This is Ben Schiffer. I'm Rabbi Pressman. We're opening up Pesach 8 days around the city in many locations with thousands of Jewish people. If anybody needs a Pesach Seder or needs food for Pesach, it's all free. There's no charge whatsoever. Okay? I'm Rabbi Pressman. It's called Ben Schiffer.
Keep it on the story. Keep it on.
This is rabbinical lines, letters included in that and showing you what we're doing.
Okay, leave it. Okay, sure. Okay, please go listen. Thank you. Okay, we'll give it out at the end of the show.
Thank you so much.
So the simple reading of the Gemara is that I thought he was coming into the shiur. I thought it was like 40 years speaker guy. Like I told you, there's some older man in this. Well, yeah, no, I figured, yeah, who knows who's coming signing up to speak now. Okay, anyway, so. The simple reading of the Gemara is that the tefillah that's done, even though it's not, the mindset isn't really geirus, the mindset is religion, the mindset is ritual, but what's the difference? It's all the same thing, it's all part of being Jewish, so that's also good enough. So if that's true vis-a-vis tefillah, then maybe the same is true vis-a-vis milah. So a meal that's done to fulfill the mitzvah tefillah, maybe you can turn around and fulfill the milah's geirus as well. So someone will bring a raya from that Gemara. The problem with bringing a raya from that Gemara is that, as we'll see, by the time we finish the sugya, that Gemara is so complicated, so problematic, because there are so many different kashas in that Gemara. How in the world do those tefillahs good? Those tefillahs are done shlopos at day's day, and those tefillahs are done at night. They have all strikes against them in terms of those tefillahs geiros. So the Rambam had a whole other pshat in the Gemara, and a different pshat, yeah, 15 different pshat in the Gemara, before we figure out what in the world that Gemara meant. So to extrapolate from that Gemara, you have to be very, very weary. So again, we'll hopefully, as we talk a little bit more about tefillah, and a little bit about day's day's role in geiros as the week's coming up, so we keep on coming back to that Gemara. So just keep it on the back burner. That Gemara may be a pivotal Gemara. So when all the dust settles, what is the din? Well, you have this kid here who had a bris milah, the Torah's mitzvah, at the age of 8 days. Now 20 years later, he wants to convert. Are we going to insist that he has a Shabbosan bris? So there are different opinions about this. There are many poskim who are lenient about this. Many of the Bati Din in America are lenient about this. And the reason why many are makel about this is almost a combination of a lot of different factors. So first of all, going back to what we started with, even the existence of this din of Atavas Dambris, the quote-unquote requirement of Atavas Dambris, this was a big question whether it even exists altogether. Half the Rishonim said the whole thing doesn't exist. And Harai, we don't make a bracha on it, so we only treat it as a suffix. Al atzad that you need it, we're not even sure whether it's the derived of the Rabbanim. The Chesnich wasn't even committed. I mean, I know the Shidduch of Bethlehem Kam Pechas, that's the derived, okay, that's true, but we're not even sure that that's, like, you know, for sure required at a level of derived. So that's another thing, you know, that we're a little bit weary about. Then you have another factor here that maybe based on one day in the Rabban, maybe it's okay. Maybe that dichli of that raya is not a good dichli. Maybe according to the Rabban, one day it would be okay. Maybe the raya from Tevila is a good raya. So we have a lot of tzadim to believe that it may very well be okay. Another tzad that's become helpful is that, how do you know that the original meal was not done with Torah's geirus? What do you mean? The kid thought it was Jewish. It may be true, the kid thought it was Jewish, and it could be that the parents thought it was Jewish also, but a lot of the Mailam are a little bit smarter. And if the Moel was a little bit perceptive, so he may have had in the back. Now, again, whether he should have been doing this Vila or not under the circumstances is a whole other story. But it could be that the Moel may have been a little bit perceptive and realized there may be something fishy going on here, possibly. And he may have had in the back of his mind, Al Hatzad, that this is not up to par. This Mila, well, it may at least be able to serve as a Mila's Gaira sometime down the line. So if the Moel had that in mind, the Shea Mila's Gaira's, that will alleviate the entire Shaila. Either with the Hezden presence, we'll get to his Beis Din, we'll see what the Beis Din for Mila may not be the end of the world. We'll get to that hopefully much further down the line. So when all the dust settles, many of the Bata Hezden are making on the Shaila. We have a lot of these factors combined together. Again, others won't want to take any chances, they'll do a tough time for us. Even in these cases of a lot of different latest suspects in the direction that it wouldn't necessarily be necessary. So, although we're talking a lot about Tavas Dan Bris, which again, as Bana says, is a very common thing. A lot of non-Jews are medically circumcised before. What exactly is this Tavas Dan Bris, just in terms of practically? What exactly is Tavas Dan Bris? So there was a big machlokes in the poskim, how exactly you go about practically doing Tavas Dan Bris. So apparently the minig for years was that the area of the aver that bleeds, only the soft fleshy part, right at the bottom of what we call the atarim, whether that's the exact halachic term or not, is also a question. But the beginning of the fleshy part, not the softer part, so to speak, at the top, so the fleshy part, that will bleed. If you poke that, so it's going to bleed a little bit. So that's what the minig was, the Moelim used to do. That was that toughest number. So the Chazon Ish raised the question about that. So the Chazon Ish said that he thinks that toughest number is supposed to be on the area which is covered normally by the Ora Orla. If the whole goal of a Tavas Dan Bris is to be a substitute to the Hasaras Orla, so then you have to do the Tavas Dan Bris on the place where the Ora Orla used to be. The place that the Moel are drawing blood from, that's not the Ora Orla anymore. That's below the Ora Orla. So the Ora Orla was on the very tip part of the Aver, which it doesn't really bleed in the classic way. Because the Nish said that you don't have to mavish poke, just scratch a little bit, and you do what's called Nitra Adam, and you make a scratch, so just like in Shabbos, it's not a vimo, and it causes a little bit of the blood to collapse, that's considered to be like making a chabura, that's like that Tavas Dan Bris, so that would be sufficient. That would be the more correct way to do that Tavas Dan Bris. So you have different opinions exactly how to do the Tavas Dan Bris. To the best of my knowledge, I think they still do it the old way. There are some who wanted to do the Chazon Ish also. I don't know. Again, what I was told is that the Bata Dinim today still do it. Do you have any up to date on this? That's what they do, right? They still do it the old way of just drawing blood from that fleshy part and showing the super that's considered to be the Tavas Dan Bris. Again, the whole Tavas Dan Bris has a lot of spakus, a lot of questions about it. But again, we do it. We do paskin that you need it. If and when, the halacha is that you need it, so we will insist on doing it. But again, the minigas do it in the old fashioned. So again, we spoke a lot of time about Mila, and now we move on a little bit, at least we'll get to start a little bit, about the Tvila. So Tvila is also an integral part of Geirus. For we pass the Eno Gera Chimo Gifo for a woman, obviously Tvila, of course, everybody, Tvila is the master, that's all there is, right, no more, for a woman. So obviously Tvila has to take place properly. In order for Tvila to take place properly, before we can discuss the details of the Tvila as relates to those Geirus, we just have to just quickly familiarize ourselves with just the basic ABCs of Tvila and Kol Tarkula. So the Tvila that we're talking about here has to be a Deraisa Dika Tvila. Geirus is a Deraisa. So the standards of Tvila have to be a Deraisa Dika standards. The most important part of a Deraisa Dika Tvila is that the body of water that you're using is going to be kosher to the Tvila. It has to be a real bona fide mikvah in the love of Deraisa. Why do I say that? Is there such a thing as not a mikvah Deraisa? Yeah, there is. You could have different mikvahs that are quote-unquote mikvahs, or we have something quote-unquote men's mikvahs, that are not necessarily up to par in terms of really being a mikvah. Again, I think Rabbi Simon gives a whole bunch of shurim of mikvahs, I'm sure he'll elaborate more, but just for our purposes, b'kitz and imrutz, what we call something as a men's mikvah is not at all necessarily a kosher mikvah, because in order to be a kosher mikvah, the mayim can't be mayim shuvim. It has to be water that came about directly from the sky through the proper series of contraptions, that it wasn't as tabul and a kli. Many of the men's mikvahs, including the one on 187th Street, the number of mikvah, is not really technically a mikvah. It's really a giant collection of water. It's a giant bathtub. So if you fill up a big bathtub with water right out of the pipes, so we assume that the water out of the pipes is a serious concern of mayim shuvim. Whether that's 100% true or not, we'll leave to Rabbi Simon to discuss, but we assume, the halacha ma'aseh, we assume that all the city water, all the water that comes through the pipes, is considered to be Mount Shuvim. So if you just fill up a big hole in the ground with a lot of city water, so maybe that's good for Tfilas Ezra. That's why we, some places, build these men's mitzvahs, because for men's purposes, it's only in their abundance, and the Aminikas, the Chassidus, whatever it is. So for Tfilas Ezra, so you don't need a real super duper kosher mikvah. But for Tfilas Geirus, of course, you do. So we would never ever use a men's mikvah for Tfilas Geirus unless it was actually built as a kosher mikvah. Just as an aside, the same is true for Tfilas Caleb. Tfilas Caleb also required that it has to be a real kosher mikvah. I remember once somebody called me from a certain men's mikvah that they were traveling to Caleb. And I said to them, what mikvah are you in? They said, we're in the men's mikvah in Makom Pleni. I said, did you bother asking whether the men's mikvah is kosher? So they didn't bother asking. So the men's mikvah was tapenat kosher. So Tfilas Caleb was Baslam Mavotel. So you have to be especially careful when you're dealing with Tfilas Geirus. Make sure that the mikvah is going to be a kosher or a mikvah. You can theoretically use other bodies of water as well. But again, anytime you use any other body of water, so it has to pass the test of it with the gross. Not all natural bodies of water are going to be kosher. So again, when you learn it with mikvahs, you'll figure out with the rivers and lakes and oceans and all the different kinds of scenarios, what's good and what's no good. But the standard has to be the highest possible standard. It has to be good for Tfilas Nida and good for Tfilas Kelim, and of course it's good, then only then is it good for Hilchos Geirus. In addition to just the kashrus or the chatz of the mikvah, the tvila has to be done to the highest standards as well. So the most important thing that can go wrong, the most critical thing that can go wrong in the tvila, is if the tefillah is not done completely under the water. If even the smallest amount of the body, or the hair for that matter, is left above the water level, so then the entire tefillah is no good on the level of deraisa. The Gemara speaks about if you have chatzitzas on small parts of the body, it doesn't disqualify the tefillah in the Torah. That's because it went under the water, it was just a davar chatzitz. But if it didn't go under the water, that's a disaster. That's terrible. That's mamash psul min ha-Torah. That's why when a woman goes to the mikvah for tefillas nida, she has to have somebody watch her, because otherwise the hair is going to float to the top and she will never know whether all her hair went under. That's what the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Kriyashma. So the siman about Tzeir Bisha Erva, so the Mishnah Berurah has a whole long digression about this halach. He says, even though this is not Hilchos Nida, he writes, and I'm not writing a version here or there, he writes, but it's so pressing that all the women have to know, all the rabbanim have to make sure the women are aware that when they go to the mikvah, every hair has got to go totally under the water, or else the mamshin is sakaris. So the same is true when it comes to Tfilas Geirus, and Tfilas Geirus has to be supervised so properly. Besides the bays, and all that stuff we'll talk about a little later on, but just the ABCs of the tefillah, the method of tefillah has to be 100% up to par. If some of the hair is above the water, so it's ice tefillah, it's ice tefillah, the person is mamshin goy gomor. So the mikvah has to be kosher mikvah, the tefillah has to be kosher mikvah, and the tefillah has to be kosher tefillah, the dinu chatzitza has to be observed as well. So the dinu chatzitza, we don't have enough time to go through the details of everything, but just b'kitza nimrutz. So the hilchos chatzitza are the same as they are in hilchos nida. So anything that's a chashash, if it's a rubah hamakbid, it disqualifies the tefillah in the Torah. If it's a mir hamakbid, it disqualifies it in the rabbanim. So you got to be really, really serious. So the rabbanim, anytime you supervise a geirus, you have to make sure any shiles of stitches and braces or whatever. I'm not saying any of those things are problems. Bad, whatever shiles you would ask in hilchos tefillas nida, you have to make sure that those shiles are asked and answered properly in hilchos tefillas geirus as well. Okay? All right, so we'll stop here in terms of the tefillah, and then next week we'll get to the next one.